dia e bem-vindos ao JE Entrevista, o programa de entrevistas do Jornal Económico em podcast no Spotify e em todas as plataformas de streaming. A nossa convidada desta semana é Laura André Boyer, é instrutora de astronautas na Agência Espacial Europeia e Simulation Director no Centro Europeu de Astronautas desde 2010. Laura André Boyer tem um trabalho sem paralelo. Treinar astronautas antes e durante as suas missões a bordo da Estação Espacial Internacional. Uma experiência que lhe permite ir ao infinito e mais além. Esta instrutora de astronautas foi a convidada de mais uma sessão do Inov Club, uma colaboração entre a BTI, uma consultora de inovação colaborativa e a Sociedade de Advogados Vieira de Almeida. O Jornal Económico orgulha-se, naturalmente, de ser membro desta iniciativa. Esta entrevista será conduzida em inglês. Laura, thank you for being with us. I will start to ask you why someone who never wanted to be an astronaut became an astronaut instructor.
Why? This is first. Thank you for hosting me. I'm very delighted to be here and to discuss with you. Why? It's a good question. How is another one. I think it's a very strong and big asset not to envy the people that I work with, yes. that I work for. So
you have that advantage, right?
That's a huge advantage,
yes.
In my opinion. Our industry is very competitive. And when I'm not coming and applying any pressure in the system, that works very, very well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a huge advantage. How and why did I become an astronaut instructor? This is a hazard, chance,
yes.
really, and a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a passion for teaching. Your parents are a teacher, your
yes.
mother.
yes.
So that, for you, that's the most important thing. You. Could not do anything in your life without teaching competence.
I am interested in teaching, yeah. obviously, and pedagogy
and learning. Right?
And learning.
I
have a passion for learning. I think also it's a very good investment in life. I don't own a lot of things. I don't own a house. I don't even own a car. But I own the little knowledge that I have in the few things. I think I have always been interested in this type of investment.
Okay, yeah. To learn it's the
learn
to
things.
Teaching,
that's another thing. Learning
yes.
is a real passion for me, and I'm when I have a chance to learn from people or from a book, I try to do it. Acquisition of competence, I really enjoy it. Teaching. Is fascinating. It requires competences, but it also requires some other skills. And I like this way of making, having a chance to make people smarter and mm-hmm. more competent. I think it's a very empowering role, and I enjoy it.
What's the most interesting thing of being an astronaut instructor?
I like. To work in this international, very cooperative environment. So that's the ISS, the International Space Station project is absolutely beautiful in this way, geopolitically, diplomatically, and technically as well.
It's quite a kind of a United Nations of space, right?
This is another referential with its own regulations and functionment. So I really enjoy it. I like the rigor of the standards that we have to observe. I really, really like it and enjoy it. And of course, this is extremely inspiring to work with astronauts. They're very impressive people, extremely smart, and they have a sense of sacrifice that I don't have and that I admire.
So that's what's the most interesting thing that you have learned with astronauts? They are very specific students, right? Or
they're specific students, indeed. The selection is quite. This is a difficult question, but I just admire them really, and I enjoy working with them. It is extremely challenging, to be fully honest with you two. They're stressed. They have a lot of pressure, and I like also to be part of being able to share with them all what is at stake.
So to get the things easier for them, right?
Easier and to have a chance to have a stronger and longer retention of the information in the brain. This is also a big challenge for the future of human spaceflight exploration. Nowadays, ISS, we can access and return from it quite quickly. The missions are rather long, but if we need to, we can return the crew quite quickly. It won't be the case if we decide to go to the moon or mm-hmm. Mars or further. So the challenges will also be big in terms of selection and training.
Yes.
As well, how will we train this crew? How will we be able to maintain the information for a longer time in their head and their brain and sometimes body? So yeah, we're really thinking about that mm-hmm. a lot at the moment.
Okay. Besides the technical skills, which are very demanding to be an astronaut, is there any human skills that are required to the function, in your opinion?
Yes, so to get back to the selection, first they have like technical screening, and they have to have like a special level of competences and degree and so on. So that's the first filter. And then we have a series of different filters, medical filters. They have to be very healthy, or at least to be at extremely low medical risk. This is how we, this is what is better put in words. And then we have the psychology. They have to be cabled in a special manner. Of course, they're very smart. But we're also screening and searching for people that are able to think in a special way.
Okay.
And this is what is mostly important for us. We have an absolute set of priorities on board the International Space Station, which is first crew, then vehicle, and finally the mission. The mission comes last.
Yes.
And this is not the case in other industries. Sorry.
No, that's a very interesting thing that you have explained in your presentation here at Enough Club, that the mission is the last priority in space.
Yes.
Can you
so explain
that?
So let's put it the other way around. Crew comes at first,
yes.
Absolute priority. So the survival of the crew, because we sense that it's dangerous to go to space, to get there and then to live there. This is dangerous and difficult. But also the cohesion and the integrity of the crew. Just like the cohesion and the integrity of a team at work or a family.
Yes.
Okay. In our daily work and life, usually this is the objective, the mission, the performance that really is the most important, and not how well you're managing your interaction with your colleagues. That's not the case for us. For us, this is extremely important, and more than extremely important, this is the first priority. So, no conflicts. So of course we're screening population that psychologically are already behaving, have a tendency to behave this way. And then having some sorts of reactions that are not necessarily intuitive. For instance, if there would be a fire right now in the room that we're in, what would you do? The extinguisher is here and we see the fire. Well, we would extinguish the fire. In space, you don't. In space, you would be expected psychologically to spontaneously understand and observe the procedure that says you go to your return vehicle, all right? Which is not necessarily very intuitive. We're searching for this behavior already at the beginning, embedded in the psychology of our candidates.
Okay. You talk about some human skills which are required to work in that activity in space, which are not very different of what we have in the companies here on Earth. Competence, integrity, and empathy. Can you explain that trilogy?
So this is my way of building trust and improving, innovating in human skills. We are innovating with technology, but I'm a teacher, and technology can be useful, but the heart of my word is relationship with humans. So my way to enhance trust and to be as good as I can is first to be competent. That sounds obvious, but I really work a lot. I really try to acquire as many competences as I can to be able to answer sometimes very difficult questions asked by astronauts. So that's important for me. Behind the word integrity, there are a whole bunch of things. The first one that is one of the most important for me is authenticity. Like everyone in life, sometimes I was tempted to tell the exact truth, to make it look brighter and smarter, not to talk about my failures and so on. That does not work. Being authentic works very well, extremely well. It's not always comfortable, but that's a very long and good investment in terms of relationship and trust. And the final one is empathy. We talk a lot about empathy. In the end, we don't really know what it means or how to be empathic. I think one good way to start to be empathic is to be kind. Kindness is a bit underrated, very underrated. In French, when you say that someone is gentil, it's not always a compliment.
Okay.
It can be pejorative.
A kind of weakness?
It can be a weakness, and it can sound a bit like, oh, this one is a bit dumb, you know?
Oh, okay.
Kindness is, I don't know about you, but at the end of the day, I really prefer to work with people that are kind, you know, even if they're a bit less competent or a lot less, I prefer kindness. So I am using those three things as much as I can. So a lot of work to acquire competences and being very authentic, accepting who I am with my failures and my capacity, because this is difficult to be authentic also in front of astronauts that are real heroes, but that works better for me. And being kind and empathic is necessary with this population that is putting their life at risk, that is getting into a lot of health and family troubles. This is difficult, very, very difficult. So being empathic works very well also to induce trust.
This is a very important base to adopt in the daily basis in a space mission, right? Because you are with the team. If you don't have that competences, how will you... you can survive, but it's a terrible thing to be in space with persons that doesn't have competence or integrity or even empathy.
So competence, that cannot happen. They're just trained and certified all the time. They're
that's
competent.
Impossible. Yeah.
Then, of course, every astronaut has different personalities. So first, we're screening people that are not subject to conflict, that are not inducing conflicts, like they're embedded this way. But we're very lucky in another way, is that they're very busy people. You know, they're extremely busy. They're like cognitively always engaged, and that also protects the cohesion. When you always have something to do, you might have less time to think of other things. So that's very practical and naive what I'm saying. That's also very true. But yes, of course, this is easier to spend 6 months on a long mission duration on board the ISS with people that are kind and authentic. But that doesn't have to be the case. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's not the case. Competent, they're always.
Okay, I have a question. I have a driver instructor which told me once, if you have many questions in the process, you will not be a good driver. Is this happens with astronauts, or is it important for them to put questions and some doubts?
That's a very good question. What I'm going to say is a bit bold, but we talked about procedure. A good astronaut, an excellent astronaut, is an astronaut that follows the procedures and that does not challenge it. So I think question is one thing, challenging is something different. So astronauts are excellent operators. Okay, they're elevated to a level of operator in like a huge amount of different things and skills, but they remain mostly operators. And I think it's natural to ask questions for some people, but challenging the work that has been done by others is counterproductive for us.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly counterproductive.
Okay, I would like to ask you which challenges can space bring to the future of this planet, in your opinion?
Alors, so there is space and there is human space flight. Space, like, there are so many, so many challenges.
Human space flight, of
but
course.
Human space flight, so many challenges as well. So geopolitical challenges, diplomatic challenges, economical challenges. Of course, I'm projecting myself. I'm involved in the institution. So with the International Space Station program that is working very well in terms of cooperation and diplomacy as well.
Yeah.
But there are other projections for human spaceflight, commercial human spaceflight with space tourism, for instance, or exploitation, industrial exploitation of space as well, building factories in space and exploiting microgravity on board of a factory like a space station, but also mining activities. So landing on something, on the moon or an asteroid, and mining it, and then using the resources. So all of this, these are questions that are raised because like there are no laws that prevent these activities nowadays to be done. And of course, it raises a lot of regulations.
Yeah.
So it is a question of regulation, of course. It's a question of cooperation, and at the moment, this is extremely, extremely difficult. So there are a lot of challenges regarding human spaceflight, and a lot of people are thinking and working on it. So, but I think what is one of the key perspectives is to cooperate. That there would be cooperation between the institutions that have the knowledge and that have been doing things with a lot of money, yes, but like very safely and very well, with all the commercial actors as well, with the law experts and also with military people. Just thinking about peacekeeping, for instance, like we have to put, as soon as we say military, this is just very scary, but in terms of peacekeeping, this is very important to think about that as well. A lot of challenges and big one.
So you talk about geopolitical issues. Can human space flights piece the political issues that we have in the world right now?
I wish it would a bit more because the International Space Station project is a magnificent model of peace, at least amongst the partner. You know, there are not that many. There's Russia and the USOS, so the United States, Europe with ESA, and Japan and Canada, and it works very well, and it's a very nice example. I wish it could be used as a peacekeeping model, but there is a lot at stake, and we see already some commercial actors that are taking a lot of space in space.
Is there a reality to imagine that human could reach Mars, for example?
Yes, I think so. That's not the case today, but it's all matter of political decisions, of priorities, and then industry and innovation have to follow, and technology, of course. But yes, I mean, this is we can think of it already. What is really challenging is to anticipate on human behavior, really, during this very long journey. There have been some tests and experiments that have been done, but individuals are different, and this is difficult to anticipate on those dynamics, but some people are, of course, working on it.
Mm-hmm. So how is Europe in the, I don't want to call it the space race, but Europe is quite advanced in that chapter, in your opinion?
So, first, there is Europe and there is ESA.
Okay.
This is different things. ESA is a sort of a club with 22 member states and with
including
people that
Portugal.
Are including Portugal,
yes.
With those countries that are investing independently on programs, and with the mandatory program for science in space, everybody has to invest in this one. In the ISS program, ESA is part of it. All right, in the Artemis program, ESA is also part of it. In terms of independency for access to space, that's not the case. We are not autonomous.
Okay.
And there is an intention to be. So we heard that in the news in the past days. There is a very strong intention for Europe. Very strong, maybe not strong enough, according to some opinions. But there is an intention to have this autonomy in accessing space. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been part of the big institutional program, especially ISS, and we are part also of Artemis. But we still have some work and engagement to prove to be more autonomous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. You talked about space tourism. Which are the greatest challenges in that activity?
So there are different types of tourism. There are some actors like Axiom, for instance, that are selling tickets and seats for tourists, but not
yes.
only tourists, also professional astronauts that are not part, for instance, of the ISS program, or that are part of the ISS program and that don't have a seat allocated early enough, so they're buying a ticket in another way. The dynamics are quite interesting with this company. And they're like, you can be a tourist on board ISS with Axiom using a Dragon capsule, or also with the Soyuz. So we've been having a lot of, not a lot, but a few tourists flying with Soyuz as well. For us, it's comfortable because we are still training them. You know, they're coming on board our station, and we find it safer and for them and for us that they receive training from the institution. Some other actors are selling space tourism, orbital or suborbital, without the cooperation with institutions.
And that's dangerous. That's dangerous?
It's always dangerous, but I think in the frame where there is no regulation, no law, and that they're not cooperating with the institution, I think, of course, this is touchy.
If you have Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos sitting in your classroom, which advices would you give to them?
This will never happen. This will never happen. I wish it could, but which advices?
Yes.
Regarding
being more careful, being more respectful for the space environment.
I think they're careful, but cooperating.
Okay.
And
more empathy, more.
I would like to say a lot of things, but
yes.
that I could not say. But I wish one day I will have a chance to talk with them about that. That would be a good sign.
To have Ellen and Jeff sitting right in front of you. And
I don't know if I would enjoy that much, and I think I would be very impressed. But I wish it could happen, yes.
Okay. I would like to ask you about Portugal. If you think that you know Portugal, you have come here several times, do you think that it could be possible for Portugal to have an astronaut?
Nowadays within ESA, the European Space Agency, it's just a matter of investment. And of course, I think it's possible. And I think it's important, and that would be fantastic that every member state would have at least one astronaut. But maybe the model will change as well in the future. Nowadays, we have a model where astronauts are career astronauts, and maybe the model will evolve. Maybe we will decide to constitute a larger pool of kind of reserve astronauts that would be activated on the mission. That's a model that could evolve, and I hope it will evolve in this direction, to be honest, to allow more countries to have presence in space.
Okay, so a more democratic environment in the human flight space, right? Can say so?
Yeah, I think so. This is another topic, I would say. I think democratize the access to knowledge is extremely important. Extremely important, and maybe making the model evolve to allow smaller investing countries to have a presence in space. I think it's quite interesting, and it might be crucial for the future of human spaceflight.
Okay, Laura, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
To the infinity and beyond. Muito obrigado, Laura André Boyer. Esta foi uma entrevista no âmbito do Inov Club, uma colaboração entre a BTI e a Sociedade de Advogados Vieira de Almeida. Regressamos no início do próximo ano com mais convidados e mais temas. Acompanhe toda a atualidade em jornaleconómico.pt. Até à próxima.